Welcome, my friends, to the NeuroDiverging Podcast. My name is Danielle Sullivan, and I'm your host. Today, we have an amazing interview with Alexandra Gilbert, who is the founder of Capable Consulting. Alex is a coach who works with ADHDers and folks with learning disabilities, and we get into some really nice conversation about what coaching can bring into people's lives, how we both approach our sort of adjacent but slightly different jobs, and just getting to know Alex and her work in case she sounds like a good fit for you. Before we get into that, I just want to shout out my patrons who support this podcast every single month with their donations through Patreon and get cool perks. If you're interested in becoming a patron, a friend of the show, by donating a couple of bucks a month to make this podcast run, you can check us out at patreon.com/neurodiverging. Before we dive into the interview, let me tell you a little bit about Alex. Alexandra Gilbert is the founder of Capable Consulting, spelled capable with an E, like a superhero's cape. After spending her career working in leadership development, she decided to start a consulting and coaching business to help adults with learning disabilities or ADHD who have been struggling with their careers. Alex herself has dyslexia and ADHD, and she writes about her own lived experience of struggling through school and work within systems not designed for her. I know we talk about that a lot on the podcast. I hope that hearing from somebody with a different neurodivergent profile than me will be helpful for all of you. Alex created her coaching business to help others with learning disabilities navigate day-to-day workloads and to support them to reach their highest potential. I really encourage you to Google Capable Consulting, cape like a superhero's cape, and check her out. We'll also put links to all of her everything down below for you. And now, without further ado, here's my interview with Alex. Enjoy. Welcome to the podcast, Alex. I'm so happy you're here. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me, as I have a fire truck going in the background, but here we are.
I can't hear it. It's okay. There was okay, right good. Before I got on with you, there was, I guess, a tow truck or a moving truck in my small cul-de-sac with many kinds of beeping. And I was like, that would happen right before a podcast episode.
Of course, so it's still going and I'm glad you can't hear it.
I can't hear it. That's just the work from home life, I think.
There you go.
Well, I'm really, really happy that we made this happen today. I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time. So Alex is you can tell us a little bit. You're a coach and a consultant, and you work with a lot of ADHD folks and folks with learning disabilities. And we're kind of in similar orbits, I guess, as coaches, but don't serve exactly the same populations. But I have heard amazing things about your group and just am really excited to talk to you. So would you mind telling us a little bit about what you do and who you are?
Sure. So I was really privileged to be diagnosed with dyslexia and ADHD when I was 8 years old and had resources all the way through college, which most of my clients are newly diagnosed. And one of my podcasting friends called me a unicorn in this space because I was diagnosed so early. But one of the things that I realized about having resources was how valuable that could be and how hard it is when it doesn't exist. So I had been working in program and leadership development for over a decade, and I was so anxious and burnt out in the workplace all the time. And I realized it was because once I had all of those resources and no longer had them, it was like the rug was pulled out from under me. And everything you learn in school about your learning disability or ADHD and all the resources that are available are apples and oranges. You know, how do I ask for more time on a test? What does it look like in the workplace? You know, it was really frustrating to me. And I had always had this idea of supporting people with ADHD and learning disabilities all the way back to when I was 16 years old and applying to colleges, because I had an SAT tutor tell me that because I was dyslexic and had ADHD, that I would really amount to nothing. Mm-hmm. And that what I was on paper was somebody who struggled in all of these things. And I said, that's cool that that's all you see, because I'm also president of this club. I'm also on the leadership of that club. I started X, Y, and Z. That's also on paper. Why don't you see value in that? And I really wanted to find ways to not only empower myself, but empower other people. And I created a mentor retention program for students with disabilities in college. And I went to Indiana University. So not the nothing that she thought I was going to be, but I was able to really support other people who struggled in a lot of different ways. And so all of these things has kind of blended into itself. After, you know, COVID happened and I was laid off from my job. My husband and I were looking at each other and he's like, you're not going back into a regular job anymore, are you? I'm like, absolutely not. I'm like, now is the time to really do what I want, give people the support that need it, help them feel empowered and really know that they have skill sets that are valued and that they should value themselves too.
Thank you so much. So much of what you said spoke to me on a lot of different levels. Like,
I'm glad.
Obviously, I'm late diagnosed and autistic, so a different different brains.
Sure.
Also, just the apples to oranges, like you said, of being in the school system. And, you know, again, I didn't have the framing or the verbiage for what I was experiencing because I wasn't diagnosed yet. But knowing that certain things supported me, certain things were helpful, but then getting into the workplace and just not knowing how to apply this one, switch context, right? Move this support from over here to over there in a way that worked for me. And I struggled a lot in the workplace until I really managed to figure out how to make it work from my home, from my, you know, with all my supports in place.
For sure.
So I know so many folks who've handled similarly. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I always think it's fun too, to look back and see the passions of your life that started very young, right?
Oh,
but it
yes.
took time to really develop into what you do now.
You know what? I always say it wasn't necessarily the path that I expected to take. And I remember thinking, this was something that I've always wanted to do. I've talked about being a life coach at 16. I remember telling this to people and they're like, what the hell is a life coach? Like, this was like 30, not 30, I'm in my 30s. This was like 20 years ago, though, that I was talking about this and people said, what? But I kept thinking everything that I was doing up until this point was taking me further away from my goal. And I realized it actually was exactly the right stepping stones I needed in order to do the job that I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And in the places that I was in, I needed to be in those places so that I had that understanding and grasp and could relate to my clients on a number of different levels to give them that added support. So yeah, it's funny how that works. It's always been there, but it's showed up in a lot of different ways.
One of the things you said was the, I guess we weren't recording at that time, but before we got on the call, we were talking about that one of the gaps we kind of both saw that I think kind of maybe applied to both of us entering this space was that there weren't a lot of resources for adults, right? That there are resources for children and families and parenting sometimes. And sometimes they're terrible resources. Sometimes they're okay.
Well, yes.
One of the reasons I started neurodiverging was because I was a newly diagnosed autistic parent with autistic ADHD kiddos, and I could not find anything about parenting as an autistic person or homemaking as an autistic person or housekeeping as an autistic person, right? As opposed to how I should be training my children as autistic people.
I thought
that was really interesting that you said that, because it's like we both maybe saw this gap and came in and we're like, well, let's try to do something here. So what resources do you think, either that you've created or that you've seen in other places, do you have any like favorite for the adult ADHDers and other learning disabled people that you work with day to day?
It was I was like thinking as you were saying this, and it was taking me back to even why I wanted to start this.
Mm-hmm.
And I always put myself in the dyslexic first, ADHD second category, because I used to think ADHD didn't affect me the same way, because everybody at the time would say ADHD, they think of that hyperactive boy disrupting class. And I would think to myself, that's not me. I'm more dyslexic. Yeah. And then I just happened to have ADHD. So when I was coming up with different resources, I had that in the back of my head. And a lot of that has shifted as I was learning more about myself in that process. And I would say this was more in college too, that I was learning more as I was working with other students who had ADHD about what was needed and how I could figure out what that looks like in the workplace. So adaptive technology being number one, I think that is one of the most useful resources and tools that everyone can use who has some kind of a learning disability or ADHD. And two of my favorite programs are Grammarly and Speechify, which I'm sure other people have talked about many, many times. But I really love these programs, and I used similar ones in college. Mm-hmm. Having something read to me is like listening to a podcast. I am so much more alert and aware, and that is how I process information. Mm-hmm. Because as a dyslexic, I'm visualizing it in my own way. And when I have to read it and try and figure out how to decode it and try and visualize it at the same time, I'm lost. It's like in ear. Yeah, it's in one ear and out the other. Whereas if I'm listening, my mind is going exactly where I need to go. And I'm like, cool, I'm there. Mm-hmm. I can connect to it. There's that. The ADHD part of me is like, I'm really too impulsive to think through my to-do list. And if I see something that is, I can do check the box, send off an email, I'll do it and realize there's no attachments. I totally didn't make any sense when I sent this sentence. I sent it to the wrong person. Here's all the mm-hmm. things that could have helped me do my job better. And they were free resources. I mean, they have paid versions, but I think that those are huge. And I talked to a lot of companies specifically on how they can make their companies more inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on the bare minimum level of providing those services, whether they do the free or paid version, as they're handing out the laptops to their employees.
Mm-hmm.
That if that is available to every one of their employees, the person who has a learning disability or ADHD or on the spectrum doesn't feel like they have to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the times people are really ashamed to ask for resources because they don't want people to think that they're stupid or less than or incapable of their job, when really it's just they're looking for ways to do their job better.
Mm-hmm.
And they're none of those things. They are not stupid. They are not incapable of that job. They are just viewing the world in a different way.
Yeah. And when we talk about like the apples to oranges transitioning from maybe the school environment or the educational environment to the work environment, one thing that I, at least in the clients I see, so I work mostly with late identified autistic folks, but various other folks as well. A lot of folks don't know what to ask for. Like they know that they're not meeting the company's goals, and they know they're highly motivated to succeed. They're anxious to succeed. They ask for feedback. They implement so many overly complex systems and, you know, to try to do the best they can. But when we talk about, well, what accommodations would support you better, they have no idea. And sometimes that's the late diagnosis, right? That they're still reframing their sensory profiles or their ways of thinking or their, you know, emotional intelligence in this new context of autism or ADHD or whatever the diagnosis is. But sometimes it's just that whatever, if they even got support in school, which many of them didn't, if they even did, they don't know how to say, well, actually having the thing read to me would be really helpful, or having someone note take for me in meetings would be really helpful, or could I wear sunglasses inside would be really helpful. Like, it's just not even something they can generate yet. And so the idea of this just being a basic level of accommodations we make for everybody, I'm sure there are neurotypical people who would very much value having a thing read to them or being able to check their grammar for them, that, you know, that that accessibility helps everyone.
Yeah. Totally. I used to describe this as, you know, you have a ramp to your front door, but the ramp is accessible to a person in a wheelchair or mm-hmm. using a walker or a parent with a stroller. And it's for the able-bodied person who has no problem walking in the door. It is now easily accessible by anyone who wants to come in. And that's what I say to companies. If you really want to attract a diverse community within your company and really get the wide ranges of skills that people mm-hmm. who are, you know, on the autism spectrum or neurodivergent and have ADHD or learning disability, we have so many skills that could benefit their companies and organizations. But if we feel unwelcomed and we feel like we are not in a place to succeed, you're never going to get the best out of us. And all of those resources that I had mentioned, and then some, mm-hmm. are going to benefit everybody. And a lot of my clients, I was always the person who felt comfortable disclosing that I had dyslexia and ADHD. That was, I said it on every single interview I've ever had. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to sit here and like toot my own horn, but there was not a single job interview that I didn't get asked back for the next round.
Mm-hmm.
And it had nothing to do with, you know, the fact that I was saying that I was disabled. And now all of a sudden they were like, well, maybe we have to bring her back. It was the skills that I was presenting that were actually best suited for those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my clients don't feel comfortable disclosing. And I think that that's also okay. But there's a number of different ways to advocate for your needs. But I want to go back to the fact that you said people don't know what their needs are. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly why I do this, because you don't necessarily know what your needs are. Here I am, someone who has had a diagnosis since I was 8 years old. And I told you that in the workplace, I didn't know what that looked like.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say that in every job that you're in, you don't necessarily know what that looks like. You might understand some things that you need. You might need, you know, a quieter space or flexible work hours. Sure. On like the lowest level, you understand that about yourself, but you might be going into a totally different career path,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know what the expectations are there.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that it's not a stopping point to advocate for yourself as you're interviewing. It is going to be an ongoing process of learning how to communicate your needs, whether you disclose or not, about how you can do your job to the best of your ability. And it's understand that everyone has to advocate for themselves in some way, whether they have a disability or they don't.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of folks are struggling in the workplace, with figuring out not only what they need, but how to ask for what they need.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many of us are trained not to ask,
not to.
Especially if you're, you know, woman presenting, or if you're non-white, right? That asking can be seen as being aggressive or being,
totally.
You know, so there's a lot kind of going into that.
You can't solve a problem if you don't know where it starts.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't know what your needs are, the rest doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I can fill you up with lots of tools and resources. I mean, people, the conversations that people have about like, well, I'm put on an ADHD medication, I'm cured, like wipe your hands free. Like that's not how this works.
No.
So you're like, those tools are here, but they don't work unless you know how to make mm-hmm. them work for you. If you know what your needs are, you know what to advocate for. And mm-hmm. often people tell me they don't know. And I think that is one of the worst phrases people with ADHD or learning disabilities can say, because it is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I start to ask you, what do you know? You have endless lists of things that you know about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I also need to reframe that in that when you tell, let's say your boss or someone, you need help, and they say, what do you need? And you say, I don't know. Your boss or your manager or your team or even your loved one or family member or friend, when they hear you say, I don't know, they're thinking, we've been talking about this for all this time. What do you mean you don't know? You
yeah.
haven't known what you were doing. And now that's where they start to have that doubt about you and your abilities to complete all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
What you need to change this phrase to be is, this is what I know and understand.
Mm-hmm.
Can you help me fill in the gaps?
Yeah.
And by expressing what you do know, the person who you are talking to says, oh, they might be able to tell you some of the resources that make the most sense based on what you understand and
mm-hmm.
where they see your gaps are. You might be able to have a conversation and say, this is what I understand. Is this or that resource available to help me accomplish this goal better? So I'll apply this one to the workplace. So we are in a 3-hour meeting. Let's just call it what it is, the worst thing ever. It is killing your productivity.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say to your boss, this meeting is 3 hours. You and I discussed working on this project, and now I'm sitting in a 3-hour meeting. Can we find a better use of my time? Is there a specific section of this meeting that you would like me to participate in? Can you tell me when to join?
Mm-hmm.
Can we have the meeting recorded so that if I need to refer back to this meeting that I can go back to it? Is there a note taker so that if I do miss something or I am in that meeting because you think that is most productive for me, that I have something to refer back to when I am doing this project?
Mm-hmm.
None of those are going to set off any red flags that you are not good at your job. All of them are finding different ways to do your job better. And that is what your boss or your manager is hearing. So I always try and find ways to have conversations by explaining what you know and understand, because that is your strength.
Yeah. And I think it's also important in how you phrase that, that you're looking for this very narrow, specific place that you want resources, which shows that you're motivated and that you've already put, you know, a good amount of analysis behind a problem.
Exactly.
It also gives, as someone who works with a lot of autistic people, a lot of what I do day to day is actually help people script things out. So they have this problem with, say, the 3-hour meeting, and they're worried that if they, like, similar, I think, background, that if they ask their boss to skip the meeting, quote unquote, that they feel like it will be seen as them trying to get out of work, as opposed to refocus on a project that they think is higher priority. And working on thinking about, what does your boss want to see from you, right? Your boss wants to see that you are motivated, that you are prioritizing appropriately and roughly in line with what the boss thinks is important or the company thinks is important. And you asking for help to do a better job is not going to be seen as, like you said, a bad employee, right? But the way that you communicate that, as you just put it, was beautiful, because, and that's what that scripting is, right? It's like, how do you reframe the situation to be showing willing, as opposed to trying to get out of something, right? So when you say, I don't know, it just feels like, I'm thinking as a parent, when my kiddos, when they're stuck or anxious or stressed, and we're like, well, what kind of help do you need? And they say, I don't know. They can get out of it because they're 7, but it still, as a parent, is like the worst thing. It's like, okay, well, how do I help you if I don't know, if you don't know what you know? So as a boss to employee, it's even, I think, worse, because you're not a child. You do know what you need. You know, you just need to give us something to work with to help you.
And here's an example, even with your 7-year-olds, and they say, I don't know. If you are in a place where you feel stuck and you really feel like the answer is, I don't know, can you name a menu of 3 things that would help you, that would do even remotely more helpful than where you are?
Yep.
So if you don't know what you need, okay, would it be helpful if you were in a physical different space? That might be helpful. At least you can identify 2 or 3 things that would be helpful. And then that might, you know, spiral your mind to say, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, X, Y, and Z would be even more helpful.
Exactly.
But even just finding a way to identify something is better than not.
Yeah, completely. And a lot of times, when I'm working with folks, and again, in the autistic profile, which is a little different, right, than some other profiles, but like, we're looking at, okay, well, is there anything sensory going on that we can adjust, right? Light, sound, touch. Is there something environmental going on that's not sensory, but that's like, you know, heat, cold, air movement, lack of air movement, sunshine, right? You know, what we often do is kind of segment it into these pieces of, okay, are there sensory things? Are there temporal things? Are there, you know, are you eating, drinking, going to the bathroom during the day? Like, are you taking breaks? Those kind of things. And that can also help break it down a little bit to be like, well, where are you? Let's just look at this one area. If you're feeling overwhelmed and you don't know anything that can help you, we'll just think about this one piece and try from there to work out some interventions that might support. So
you're also making a point that I talk about this all the time, that people with ADHD and learning disabilities, a lot of the time, and even autism as well, that you can see the big picture and the little details all at once, which is incredible, which is why we're so innovative and creative. But it also is what makes our stumbling blocks so difficult.
Very big. Yeah.
It's very big, because all of a sudden we see this very big picture. And the reason we say, I don't know, is because we're like, oh my God, I have to do all those little details. And I'm the only one to do them. And that's so many executive functioning tasks that I just have no interest in.
Yeah.
So we just don't
do them. Yeah.
So blessing and a curse in that way, for sure.
I think I'm now in a space where it's for sure a blessing, but that overwhelm is real. And the executive function piece, as you say, is something that our profiles have in common, for sure. So we talked a little bit about the workplace piece, which I think is a large portion of most adults' lives. What other kinds of things do clients tend to want to work with you on Are there patterns that you see that folks are having particular trouble with?
Most people who come to me talk to me about work, but mm-hmm. here's what I will say. ADHD, learning disabilities, all of those things is not a light switch that you turn on and off. So we might start talking about work, but then we start talking about trouble with finances. We might start talking about the fact that they have history with disordered eating. We might start talking about that they struggle with organization. They're a parent and now they're trying to function. They're trying to find a way to function for themselves and then take care of a child, and they don't know what systems they should be putting in place for both.
Mm-hmm.
Everything bleeds into different parts of our lives. And I would say that there's not a specific that people are coming to me for, but I would say there are themes that
mm-hmm.
these are disabilities that challenge you in a number of different ways in a lot of different categories.
Mm-hmm.
And you might think, oh, I'm fine here, but I struggle with this. And it's like, okay, well, that might be the case. I personally have never really struggled with organization because that was something that I learned at a very early age with those resources, how to organize for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to, you know, this or that, I struggle with something different than one of my clients. I don't have a specific, and I think that's okay. I think
mm-hmm.
us as a community is different and our personalities are different and what we want to hyper-focus on is different. And so the challenges we face outside of the workplace are different.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting. And it's been some of my experience too, that as you said, everything bleeds. And so I guess most folks come to me, not so much with workplace issues, though they might come up, right?
Mm.
But with, we have a lot of emotional intelligence issues in the autism community because, well, for various reasons, only partly having to do with autism itself or the profile itself. But that kind of thing, you know, affects how you parent, how you talk to your boss, how you talk to your partner, right? Your romantic partner, if you have one. But also just how well you know yourself and how well you can assess what's working for you and what's not. And so it's really interesting, like the stuff. I always love looking back at when a client is sort of graduating and they are
mm-hmm.
kind of done with this period of coaching in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And you look back at where they came in and you're like, oh, okay. They came in to talk about how to script a thing for their boss to ask for a different office space, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you end up way over here with, you know, we have reorganized how you cook meals, and we've talked about parenting styles, and we've talked about organization, we've talked about like all the stuff, because it just sort of all feeds. Yeah,
it does. It does. And it's also what leads you to feel really burnt out if you mm-hmm. don't address all of those, you know, aspects of your life. One of my clients who's probably been with me the longest at this point came to me. She was late diagnosed with ADHD, and she was really trying to grapple with understanding how she thinks, to now not only understanding how she thinks, but really going into a field of advocating for not only herself, but for others. And she's like taking people under her wing, helping them explain how to advocate for their needs and what their needs are, and helping them navigate that. And I'm sitting there and thinking, all right, cool. I'm not going to cry or anything during our session, but like, this is why I do what I do. I love that. I love watching that journey. And it hasn't even been that long in the scheme of things when you think this is this woman's entire lifetime of not understanding this aspect of herself and overcompensating
mm-hmm.
to not only feeling empowered, but really helping other people. And it's not to say that every day is great. It's a struggle
job.
And it is a job, and you know, some days are better than others, but I would say without a disability, some days are better than others for other reasons.
Yeah.
And I personally think of this as, you know, my strength and my superpower. And I think it's okay to see the glass half full
mm-hmm.
and not, I don't see it as like a toxic positivity to say I have strengths.
Yeah.
And this is what they are.
I think there's a huge difference between toxic positivity and that sort of almost, you know, the positive psychology solution focused,
mm-hmm.
like, how do we make steps forward? Like, you are who you are. You can change yourself a little bit in one direction or the other, right? But also, like, we're all humans. We're all here. We all have value. How can we you know, add to the community? Because I don't know, that's my baseline. And I don't know that every client I have is of that same philosophical bent. But my baseline is, if we're all in the community together, the larger human community, how can we each do our little tiny piece to try to leave the world better than it was when we came in? And if that's partnering with people on their individual journeys to like better self-knowledge and more happiness in their life and happiness with their kids and happiness at work, like, I'm thrilled to just do that. Like, that is enough.
I totally agree. But I'm also, as you were saying that, thinking of how much people are holding themselves back in those scenarios because they're trying to fit into someone else's box that doesn't exist for them. And so, you know, when you are trying to continuously compare yourself to people who don't have these disabilities and seeing, look how much they can do and why is this a struggle for me, it also bleeds into that frustration. And I feel like if you lean into your strengths and know that everyone has weaknesses and understand how you can support yourself through those weaknesses, I think it also just makes for a better life experience
absolutely.
To really embrace what's happening around you.
No, I completely agree. And I think that a lot of the, I mean, we've talked before on other episodes about how insidious ableism is, the same as all the other sort of structural stuff that just gets built up in us as children and young adults, and that we're constantly sort of renegotiating as we age and become more aware of it. And that comparison piece of looking at the people next door or the other parents in your kid's classroom or whatever, it just drives you further away from knowing yourself. You're paying so much external attention to those folks instead of looking at what you are bringing. And I completely agree with you. That can be so damaging. It's really important to reframe and look at what you're doing yourself.
You know, my daughter is 7 months old, and I have made it very clear of how I was going to speak to her and speak to myself about this whole journey of being a new parent and watching the comparison game that happens so early. I mean, it happened,
oh my gosh,
during pregnancy, and watching people who were like, oh, well, this one's having this symptom and I'm not. Does that mean something's wrong? I don't know. You could literally go down a rabbit hole with that. And then watching friends of ours whose kids are roughly the same age and they're doing this and they're doing that. And I'm thinking, my daughter's going to do what she's going to do at the point she's going to do it. And I'm here for that journey and supporting her and like making those things happen. Like, my kid never rolled over. And I remember saying to the pediatrician, is that a problem? And she looked at her who's sitting up and she's like, she's fine. And I was like, okay, cool. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know, but I'm like watching other people and thinking, you know, if I didn't know any different, then I would start to drive myself crazy. And I think that that's part of the frustration is when you don't know any different and you didn't know that this was going to be different for you, and you put yourself in that comparison game because you didn't know.
Yeah.
Now that you do, let's acknowledge that things are different for you, and what success looks like for you is different, and how you can enjoy can be different, but it doesn't mean you can't enjoy those things.
Yeah.
And you can't enjoy and embrace who you are and what your strengths are and how that applies to everything else in your life.
Yeah. Beautifully said. Thank you. Would you be willing to tell folks where they can find out more about you and Capable and all the things you do?
Sure. So you can find my website. I spell Capable my own way because, again, I'm dyslexic. I spell everything wrong. I also wanted people to see their strength as their superpower. So I have CAPE, and it's Capable Consulting. It's actually how I thought things were spelled. So it's Capable Consulting, CAPE.com. And then you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at I am Capable, CAPE, Capable, and LinkedIn and Facebook, it's Capable Consulting LLC, again, CAPE. Right. So I offer one-on-one coaching, I offer courses, I am launching a community for people who have learning disabilities or ADHD that will have, you know, workshops and co-working spaces and resources there as well. So come find me.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, Alex. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening today. We hope you come back for the next one in about 2 weeks. Thanks to Alex for her time in this interview. And thank you again to my patrons for supporting this podcast and allowing me to make these resources for you. It is the privilege of my life. Please check us out at neurodiverging.com. Please check out Alex's link down below. And please check out the Patreon, patreon.com/neurodiverging. We hope to see you in the next podcast. And please remember, we are all in this together.